Interestingly, lingas are found all over the world. In Africa, there are terracotta lingas, largely used for occult purposes. In Delphi, Greece, there is a linga below the ground known as the navel of the earth. This is purely a Manipura linga meant to promote prosperity and material well-being. When someone showed me a picture of it, I immediately knew what type of people had consecrated this. It was definitely done by Indian yogis thousands of years ago. There is no doubt about that. When I consecrated Adi Yogi, the abode of yoga in Tennessee, in the year 2015, it was an event of considerable spiritual import. In fact, a milestone for classical yoga in the Western world. Having seen various ancient sites of interest, I am quite certain nothing of this kind of energetic significance has happened in North America or indeed in the Western Hemisphere in the last 3,000 years. Consecrated through the process of prana pratishta, the space is a tribute to Adi Yogi, the world's first yogi, exclusively dedicated to the pursuit and practice of yoga. The space represents a living repository of the highest level of energetic vibrancy and exuberance and offers a unique spiritual possibility to seekers in the West. Most of the lingas in India right now represent one chakra or two at the most. They are invariably consecrated for material well-being. There are some anahata lingas consecrated to promote peace and joy as well. The uniqueness of Dhyanalinga is that it has all seven chakras energized at their peak. To create seven separate lingas of seven chakras would have been so much easier, but the impact would not have been the same. So the Dhyanalinga is like the energy body of the most evolved being, referred to in the yogic culture as Shiva. Eternally available to all, this is the highest possible manifestation. If you push energy up to very high levels of intensity, it can hold form only until a certain point. Beyond that, it becomes formless. People are largely incapable of experiencing it. Dhyanalinga has been consecrated in such a way that the energy has been crystallized at the highest point beyond which there can be no form. It was created so that the intimacy of sitting with a live guru is available to every seeker who longs for it. Above all, what makes the Dhyanalinga an immense and unprecedented spiritual possibility is the fact that it represents the opportunity to experience life in its complete depth and totality. One who comes into this sphere is influenced on the level of akashic or etheric body or vijnanamaya kosha. If you bring about a certain transformation through physical, mental or energy body, it can be lost in the course of life. But once you are touched on the level of your etheric body, it is forever. Even if you go through many lifetimes, this seed of liberation will wait for the right opportunity to sprout and flower. It took me a 3.5 years of very intense process of consecration to complete the Dhyanalinga. Many yogis and adepts have attempted to create such a linga, but for various reasons, all the required ingredients never came together. This was not my will. It is my guru's will. Though my contact with my master was momentary, it has in every way been momentous. It has directed every step of my life, including my very birth. The Dhyanalinga has finally been accomplished with his grace and with the love, support and understanding of many people who gave of themselves knowingly or unknowingly, willingly or unwillingly, consciously or unconsciously. I am grateful to them all. Mountains of Grace. For most yogis and mystics, the problem has been that they could never share the fruits of their realization with people around them. To find another person capable of receiving what you know is not easy. If you find even one person, you are fortunate. So most spiritual masters downloaded their knowing in remote but not entirely inaccessible places. They often chose mountain peaks because there is less human traffic and disturbance in such places. There are many wonderful places like this in India. Mount Kailash, the mountain peak in western Tibet, that is regarded as a sacred place of immeasurable power and antiquity, is the place where maximum amount of knowledge has been stored for a very long time in energy form. Kailash is the greatest mystical library on the planet. Almost all the religions of the East hold it as highly sacred. Among Hindus, it is traditionally regarded as the abode of the great god Shiva and his consort Parvati. The Buddhists hold it holy because three of their great Buddhas are believed to be living there. The Jains believe their first great master or Tirthankara attained liberation there. The Bon religion, which is the original religion of Tibet, also considers it deeply sacred. I have been taking people to Kailash for the past 12 years. When I went there in 2007, my health was particularly bad. I had been traveling for weeks non-stop, during which baffled medics in different parts of the world had diagnosed me with a variety of illnesses including malaria, dengue, typhoid, and even cancer. The confounded doctors termed my blood reports esoteric. Finally, I decided to look inward and work on myself. A few days later, I went to Kailash. I was better at this point, but still very weak. When I looked at the mountain, I saw there was so much mystical knowledge waiting to be accessed, so I took a strand of energy from the mountain and connected it with my energy system in a certain way. As soon as I did that, there was a sudden resurgence of vitality, and my depleted energy body, ravaged by nearly 8 weeks of fever, bounced back to normal. I looked younger, felt better, even my voice had changed, just in about an hour's time. The results were visible. There were almost 200 people around me who witnessed this. There are other places of enormous vibrational energy where mystics have bequeathed the fruits of their spiritual practice. Such spaces are innumerable in the Himalayas. A variety of mystics and yogis chose these mountains as their abode. When they lived there, they naturally left behind a certain dimension of energy. As a result, the Himalayas gathered a certain aura. For example, Kedarnath is just a small temple in the Himalayas. There is no deity there. It is just an outcrop of a rock. But it is one of the most powerful places in the world. If you strive to improve your receptivity and then visit a place like that, it will just blow you away. There are many places like that in the East, but the Himalayas attract the most people. There is another place called Kumar Parvat in southern Indian state of Karnataka. Parvat means mountain, Kumara refers to the son of Shiva, whose name was Kartikeya. He fought many battles, trying to transform the world, but when he realized the futility of this, he came to this region. It is here that he washed his sword of its blood for the last time. He decided that even if he fought for 1,000 years, he was never going to change the world, and that one violent solution would breed another 10 problems. So he climbed up the mountain and stood on the summit. Normally when a yogi wants to shed his body, he will either sit or lie down. But because he was such a warrior, Kartikeya stood up and exited his body standing. If one can exit the physical form voluntarily without damaging it, that is an indication of absolute mastery over the life process. This is generally referred to in the Indian tradition as Mahasamadhi, a glorious equanimity. When I went to Kumar Parvat many years ago, a small tent was set up for me. I wanted to sleep in it, but when I went in and tried to lie down, my body would involuntarily move into a standing posture, dismantling the tent. The whole night I was not able to sit, my body would only stand. That is when I started seeing what Kartikeya's life was all about. Although he lived thousands of years ago, what he left behind is still vibrantly alive. This kind of work can never be wiped out. Whenever a person does something with his life energies, he creates a certain possibility which cannot be erased by any event. The work and presence of anybody who experimented even a little bit with the inner dimensions can never be destroyed. For example, Gautama the Buddha is supposed to have lived 2500 years ago, and Jesus is supposed to have lived 2000 years ago. But as far as I am concerned, both are a living reality. Once you create a certain volume of work with your life energies, it is permanent for all practical purposes, and time does not destroy it. If you work with the physical body of flesh and blood, it has a limited lifespan. If you use your mind, the lifespan of that work is much longer. But if you work with your fundamental life energies, then the result is timeless.